I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So hello everyone, welcome to the show. Here we are again with Internet Marketing, and we have Daniel Rolls, Head of Internet Marketing.
Hello there.
And we have Jeremy Jacobs, Internet Project Manager.
Hello there.
And today we're talking about usability.
Absolutely.
Usability of websites. So why don't we start off by perhaps asking, what is usability?
I think the bottom line with usability is about making your website easier to use for the customer, for the user that's using the website. Mm-hmm. It's about not putting obstacles in their way and allowing to achieve the targets, whatever they're trying to achieve through your website. And that's the key thing. It's really about thinking from your customer's point of view and just mm-hmm. thinking about what they want to do when they get to your website, what they're trying to achieve, and just not making it difficult to do. It's a classic thing. It was always a statistic that something like 60 to 80% of people dropped out when they were on a site trying to buy something.
Oh, giving up halfway through.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And that could be because they couldn't find the product, or you know, the shopping cart process yeah. didn't work properly, yes. or whatever it may be. Yes. But if you could increase your turnover of your business by 60 to 80%, it'd be phenomenal. So it's an awful lot of orders and people are losing.
Now, I've been there myself, actually. I've tried to buy things on the internet and just given up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Halfway through.
And even if you're not trying to, you know, people don't even buy things through your website. They might just be trying to find your contact details or learn about your company. And it affects your branding, because at the end of the day, if your website is difficult to use, people come away from the website with an impression of you that's different to what yeah. you probably want. Yeah. So it does affect all kinds of companies, charities, small businesses, arts websites, all kinds of different things. It really kind of reflects the image of the company and the individual. Even when you have an individual that has a website, it's still very important that the website's usable and people can achieve what they want to achieve.
And it's a big area of usability, isn't it? I mean, there must be some sort of generic rules that you have to use, but I mean, what do you have to sort of focus on if you're designing a site with usability in mind?
Well, I think the first really important thing when you start out is to actually really sit down and think about who your target audience is. Mm-hmm. Okay, a lot of people will come, you know, think about their website and not actually really think about who's coming to use their website. There's ways of getting that information through access to things like web stats, web logs, which can tell you who's actually coming to your website, maybe what countries they're coming from, you know, different areas,
right.
things like that. And actually sitting down and working out, you know, what they're coming to your site for, and what they want to achieve, and then making sure that the your primary target audience and the things that they want to achieve, they can do as quickly and easily as possible. Just to add to what Dan was saying earlier about, you know people dropping out, we have to remember that, you know, if you own a shop and someone comes in and you give them bad customer service, you'll see them walk out the door.
Yes.
But with websites, we're not really going to know very easily, so you know, these are what we call silent losses.
Right.
So we need to make sure that, you know, these aren't happening as much as possible.
I think that's very true. It's really about taking a step back from your own website. We all get lost in our own websites and projects. I mean, if you're doing anything for long enough, you lose perspective on it.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think it's just about taking a step back and thinking, okay, what am I actually trying to achieve here? And a website shouldn't be about ego. It shouldn't be about, you know, oh, I want it to be very whiz bang and, you know, pretty and all that kind of thing. It should be really about, what does a user need? What does a user want?
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get it being pretty at the same time, then that's all for well and good. But you need to really kind of think about what the user's objectives are.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, if you're emotionally attached to it as well, aren't you? I mean, if you've been designing a website, you can't see the wood for the trees, really.
Yeah,
it's no good trying to test it yourself. You have to get a third party normally, don't you?
Absolutely. I think that's the thing. I mean, something we'll talk about a little bit more, but it is letting other people test your website can really show you an awful lot that you'd be quite surprised at.
So I find my mother's actually a very good website test. If I design a web app, I'll say, Mum, try and use that.
Absolutely.
And if she can't use it, I know it's rubbish, basically.
Yeah.
And I have to make it so she can.
Yeah, well, most, I mean, two usability experts that we sort of spend a lot of time looking at the research to, Jakob Nielsen and another guy called Jerry McGovern as well.
Right.
And they do say that, you know, generally you can get five people to test your site for you, anyone.
Yeah.
And within those, you know, those five people testing your site, you'll be able to, you know, find out the major problems, you know, the
pretty
really
quickly
big ones, very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And that can be your friends, your family, you know, your mum, your nan, so it doesn't have to be expensive or time consuming. And I think that's something that people miss out. They'll get so keen to get their lovely site they've just built up onto the web, they don't actually take this into consideration. And then, of course,
do you think it's really bad to get a site up there before you've tested it, or do you think it's
absolutely
okay? So it's not okay to put it up and then test it? You should get it tested before it goes live.
I think there's two stages. I think you can get a site up there and as long as you've got a good base idea, but you've got to be careful you don't alienate your customers. I mean, if you can refine the website as you're going on, then that's, I mean, everyone should be doing that anyway.
Yeah.
But you do need some level of testing, first of all, because the problem is if there's dead ends in that site, you're not even getting any data back, because you don't know that after three steps into the shopping cart, nothing works.
Yeah.
So you do need a certain level of testing. I think, you know, every website should be constantly being tested and constantly being developed. It should be an iterative kind of process that you're going through all the time.
Constant improvement.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's, as Jeremy said, the whole thing about silent losses, unless you're very carefully monitoring what's going on your website, you don't know what's going on. You could be getting thousands of people coming in, you're just thinking, well, I'm getting no traffic, that's why I'm not getting any sales. But that may not be the case at all. So,
So you mentioned stats. I mean, how do you actually know what people are doing? How do you analyse those stats?
I think that that you do, most web service base that you'll get will have some sort of access to web logs.
Yes.
That will tell you how many people are coming, roughly where they're coming from, how long they're staying for, maybe what page they're coming in on, what page they're leaving on, which is a good set of information to start from, because you know that if pretty much everyone's leaving on the same page, then there's something wrong with that one individual web page. Unless it happens to be your homepage, because about 60% of people will quite often just come in and drop straight out because it's not what they're looking for.
Yes.
Make a very quick decision.
Yeah.
But if it's two or three into your website and they're all dropping out on that page, there's a problem with that page.
Right.
So that's a good first starting point. The next stage to go from the web logs is to analytics. And analytics gives you a lot more information in a lot more detail. And allows you to see visually what's going on and look at it in terms of marketing and business and that kind of thing.
So is analytics a more detailed look? Is it where the data's been interpreted more?
It is. And web stats can have the limitations. With analytics, you've got a bit more clarity. That's the key thing.
Yeah.
The good thing is now that Google give away an analytics package for free called Google Analytics.
Right.
So if you set yourself up a Google account, you can literally go and get Google Analytics for free. Gives you a piece
for your
of,
site?
Yep, for any
site.
Okay. Gives you a piece of code you put on every single web page on your website.
Yeah.
And then you can go in and you can see the stats, you can see what's going on.
Right.
It'll either give you a visual representation of any particular page on your website and tell you who's clicked where and what percentage of people have clicked on that link.
Okay.
Now, the useful thing about that is if you've got five menu options, and you basically want to know what's the most important menu option, what should you be focusing your efforts on, you can see which one most people have clicked on compared to the others.
Yeah.
So it's a really, really useful tool, and I really strongly advise people to use it because it's free.
So, so that's Google Analytics.
Yep.
Is there an address for that?
If you go to analytics.google.com.
Analytics.google, right, okay.
Yeah, and you'll find it straight away there, and it's a pretty straightforward thing to implement as well. There's huge amounts of features, so if you want to get into it in more depth, and obviously there's everything there, but it's a good starting point, it's a good place to start.
Okay.
So
once you've got that information, I mean, what can you actually tweak on the website? How does one take that information and change things?
Yeah, I think it's important to mention about how people actually read websites. I mean, there's been a lot of research done into sort of things with these eye tracker studies where they actually monitor where people's pupils are going.
Where people are looking,
And I mean, there's a lot, we could talk probably for 20 minutes about it, but just a very sort of brief overview is understanding that people, you know, when we pick up a book, we read from top, top left-hand corner, across the page and down. Well, people don't do that with websites now. Their eyes will always go to the centre of the page.
Yeah.
Then their eyes will tend to move over to the left-hand side. And then after a few seconds, if they don't find anything interesting, it will move over to the right-hand side. Which is what you can sort of see now with how websites are laid out. You have a left-hand navigation, centre content, and maybe a right-hand navigation, and maybe a main navigation across the top. And the reason for that is that people have become used to the way that the website works, and making sure that your website does conform to these sorts of standards will help people use your site very easily.
Yes.
Some people think it's clever to move your navigation over to the right-hand side to be a bit different and quirky, but all you're doing is you're going to annoy the user straight away, even on the subconscious level.
I just wanted to mention something on that. We saw this fantastic website, and the way it was built was it didn't use standard navigation at all.
Right.
It had a 3D cube, and you could spin the 3D cube, and then you pressed on a particular site, it would open up, and then you had options within. I mean, it looked amazing. The problem was that you go to it, and that after about 2 or 3 weeks of it running, they added a link at the bottom saying how to use this website. And it was very clear. The problem was you couldn't work out what you were doing, where you were going. Very, very, you know, original. But the bottom line is no one was going to look at the website, because after 10 minutes you were hugely frustrated. You couldn't work out what you were doing. And that was the end of that website. So, it's still running like that, but I don't think they're getting a lot of traffic, a lot of use out of it.
And was it a flash-based cube?
It was a big flash-based cube.
Okay.
Lots of inbuilt video and all kinds of things like that, which is all very, very nice, but it doesn't really allow them to achieve their objectives.
And that's also very search engine unfriendly, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, websites, Google can now technically read the contents of a flash page, but you're not going to get good rankings basically if you've got an entirely flash website. So.
And I've also seen quite a few sites. Well, in fact, you don't see them so much these days, but where it says it's got some sort of fancy graphic and it says click here to enter site. Is that another sort of no-no?
Splash pages are.
Is that called a splash page?
Absolutely.
Splash page, and you get this click here to enter the website, but you've done that by entering the URL and pressing go.
Right.
So why do I have to take
it's an extra step,
these barriers to information, what we call them? It's a nice infrastructure thing. But you know, it was very, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, it was very in to have these flash splash pages. But
so don't splash out on splash pages.
Absolutely,
it's a real no-no.
It comes down to another usability thing, in that whatever you're looking for shouldn't be more than 3 clicks away.
Yeah.
So in terms of navigation, you maybe go to a topic, a subtopic, and then you'll find what you're looking for. Any more than 3 clicks, you see the dropout rate from the website. People not actually getting to what they want to achieve gets very, very high very quickly.
Right.
4 clicks, you lose about 40% of people. Then 5 or 6. You know, you're getting up to the 80-90% kind of levels.
Right.
Just because people can't find what they're looking for, so they just drop out and go to another website.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that also people are much more less patient, you know, with being on the web. They expect information now. This is one of the promises of the internet, it's information finger.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Fingertips, so people want that information, you know, right now.
Yes.
Not having to wait. So as Daniel says, you know, they're going to get less patient. A really good example, because we run a writing for web course where we do talk about web usability, and a classic example I always use is local council websites, and just the way they handle their bin collection times. We've done a lot of work with local councils in the past, and we've always found that their websites, that they really want to find, you know, most people come into the site to find bin collection times. If you actually try and go onto most local council websites, it's near on impossible to find.
Really?
It will be really, really, you know, heavily buried down. Even if it's on a page, it'll be at the bottom. They'll tell you how many EU targets they've met and how many bins they collect and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But that's not the information that their primary target audience want. They want to know when their bins are going to be collected.
Yes.
So it's going all the way back to the beginning and thinking about what your target audience wants, the majority of people, and putting it up in the centre as much as possible. I think that's the first key thing people can do to actually try and make their sites more user-friendly.
Yeah, so it's putting a priority on the information instead of saying, well, what do they want to see first?
Yeah,
what's the most important thing
absolutely.
To them?
Yeah. And it's making it clear what the information is about, this whole writing for the web thing. You need to break web pages down into headings, short paragraphs, bullets.
Yes.
A paragraph of text, you know, is easy enough to read, but a set of bullets is a lot quicker and easier to read. So if someone comes into a web page, you've literally got less than a second for them to judge what that web page is all about.
Yes, I remember reading this actually because you mentioned Jakob Nielsen. I read one of his books and he mentions that people scan on the net, don't they, rather than reading down.
Yeah, completely.
And it's actually quite difficult to read on a screen, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you don't have the same clarity there. There's only seven, you've got sort of not the same detail you do with print, so your eyes become much more tired quickly. People generally read 25% slower online than they will offline.
Right.
So making it very clear using sans serif fonts, so things like Verdana, Tahoma, Arial.
Yeah.
The ones without the little what I call flicky bits.
So these are good fonts to use, aren't
good
they?
Good fonts. Bad fonts are things like Times New Roman, which is very difficult to read. Putting large blocks of text into italics, again, is something that's going to slow people's reading speeds down a lot further.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things, little things like that, that you can do to actually help users to understand or read your page better.
Right, okay.
The other thing is focusing on the content, and really, each page should be one topic. It should be focused on something very clear. And if you want other topics, then link off them to separate pages, but make sure a page is very, very focused. People will scroll down a page, but only if they already know the article is exactly what they're interested in reading about and they've got to what they're fan about. So classic example is the BBC website.
Yes.
In the first of all, you have an opening paragraph that's in bold that summarises everything that's there, and then as you go down the page, that's when you're into the detail of what's actually going on. So
you drill down for the detail
completely. And I think it's just making it clear to people what it's about. They know what it's about, then they'd be willing to scroll down. If they're not, if they haven't found what they're looking for, people generally won't scroll down the page very much. So anything below the fold, as we say, which is just basically off the bottom of the screen, you have to scroll down to, generally won't be found unless someone's already interested in that page.
Yes, this concept of the fold, I've come across it before. So it's the bit you can't see when you first look at a web page.
It's actually
below
a little bit higher. It's actually two thirds of the way down the screen.
Oh, okay.
People's eyes will not generally come that far down the screen.
Okay.
If you think about the way that, now with the mice with the little scroll wheel, people don't tend to actually sit there and, they'll just sit there and scroll down with their finger, bringing the information further back up to the page at the higher level. So anything generally around two thirds below the page is what we call
The fold.
Below the fold,
right?
And that's the sort of area that people actually tend not actually to bother with. And it's always important to remember that users prefer scrolling than clicking.
Right.
Yeah. So keeping that, so people don't have to click around. They'd much rather scroll down information.
Do people use that as the scroll wheel much?
I think so.
Evidence shown that?
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you notice, what we found is that bottom third of the screen, rather than reading to the bottom of the screen and then going to the next level of the screen, people will read the top two thirds, then scroll that up to the top of the page and then read it.
Right.
So it's all about, as a lot of people are doing. The thing with the scroll wheels, you can't assume many people have got them, because lots of users do have them now, but it's different machines, different types of mice, all that kind of thing. It's always going to be different. So you can't make any assumptions about that, but people don't mind if they're focused on the topic, they're more than happy to scroll. But scrolling sideways is just a big no-no.
And of course, this concept of keeping a page very focused is also good for search engine optimization, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely, because it means that the search engine can see that a page is particularly focused on a topic, therefore it's going to give you a better ranking because it's a good focused content. That's assuming the page is well optimized and it's good quality content.
Yeah,
but if you can keep it focused, the search engine will know what it's all about and can see a key focus on the whole thing.
Okay, so let's say that we've done all these things, we've got some feedback and we've made a few changes. How can we tell if it's actually worked? Is there any techniques we can use?
Two things. User testing. Going back to that again, you should be iteratively doing this. So sit people down and say, right, go and find me the address or go and buy this product.
Yeah.
And just watch what they do and how they navigate through your website. And you'll be amazed. Even very web-savvy people will do things you'll completely not expect them to do.
Yes.
They'll search in different ways. Some people use search boxes. Some people will navigate. Some people will find a kind of a sitemap or a page index and go that way. So it's good to watch people using the website, and that'll give you some good kind of pointers to see if they're finding things more easily.
Yeah.
The other thing is to look at the analytics again and say, okay, First of all, people were coming to our website and they were staying 2 minutes. They're now coming and staying 5 minutes. They're going through the site more,
right,
but they're actually achieving the objectives. And you can set these things called conversion paths.
Yes.
Which basically say, okay, what a conversion for me is someone filling in my contact form, or right, someone buying a product, or someone finding my contact details.
So it's a bit like a goal.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And the idea being you've converted them into a customer.
Right.
So you look at it and you can set it up in Google Analytics, for example, or whatever tool it may be, and you can say, this is what I want them to do coming from the homepage. Yeah. And you can see what map of pages people go through to get to that objective.
So Google Analytics allows you to do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, and it'll give you a good indication of the actual behaviour of people when they get there, where they're dropping out, how long they're staying on individual pages, mm-hmm, and what percentage of people are getting to that final goal that you want them to get to. Right. Are they going off somewhere else and getting completely lost?
Yes.
And then again, you feed that in, make some changes accordingly. And it's common sense, a lot of it, but it's just kind of thinking about the site from a user's point of view.
Yeah.
So you do that, you can't really go too wrong.
Can we just talk briefly about testing? Because it's a very interesting... What's the best way to test? I mean, get people into your office and watch people off the street? Or what sort of people do you use?
The ideal one is to think about who your target audience is,
yeah,
and be using people as part of that target audience who are in that group. That's not always easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the other problem is as well that when you're actually monitoring people, so you're kind of, like, if you're sitting over someone's shoulder,
yeah,
it affects how they use a website.
But they'll behave differently. Yeah,
yeah. Completely.
Yeah.
You can get screen recording software that will actually record what someone's doing on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the ideal situation where someone just goes in, uses a computer as they would do normally, and it's just being recorded.
Yeah.
So you can monitor what they're doing. But it's quite difficult to set up in an ideal situation.
Right.
If you want to spend lots of money on it, that's probably the way to go. You get quite a large proportion of people of different users, and that'll be effective. But as you mentioned before, if you just take 5 users, no matter who they are, that will give you so much information for the first quite a long period of time, you're better off doing that than doing nothing.
Right.
So just take 5, you know, selection of users from different kind of backgrounds.
Yes.
People using your website will be all from different backgrounds anyway. There'll be some computer savvy ones, ones that don't like the internet, some that are pro internet, all that kind of thing. So just good kind of mixed selection, 5 people, get them testing the website, give them some objectives to achieve, sit there and watch what they do and write down what they do.
Okay.
And just see where the bottlenecks are.
Yeah, I think it's also important to remember it depends on the size of your website. If you're talking like a, you know, sort of like £20,000 corporate website, you know, with a huge audience, then you're going to want to think about putting some budget in there to actually get, you know, even going to an actual outsourcing it to a professional agency who will do user testing for you, and getting your target audience actually onto your site and testing out is the ideal situation.
Yeah.
But of course, that's not affordable for even, you know, sort of medium-sized companies. And just as we said, you know, getting 5 people to test it out will actually definitely find out all of the information. And also, as we've said, I think it's best to not actually just to observe them, to give them some tasks to do, as Dan said, and just let them get on with it, as if they were just using the site on their own.
So you literally sit them down and go, right, order this item, find and order this item.
You need to contact us, you know.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, don't be too specific, but just sort of give them an idea about a task that someone would generally want to achieve,
right,
and then just, you know, see how quickly they can achieve it, maybe ask some questions afterwards or something like that.
And presumably the 5 and 6 is enough, because I guess if there's a big problem with the site, it's going to come up pretty quickly, isn't it?
Any major ones will come out very, very quickly with just 5 people, and you'll be surprised how much information 5 different users will give you.
Sure.
Yeah. You don't want to confuse this with your internal testing as well, though, because you need to be going through your site with a, you know, sort of very, very in very, you know, lots of detail.
Yes.
Checking, proofreading everything, you know, and doing, you know, the obvious things to you.
Yeah.
And then getting other people to test just to see generally how your site actually functions as a sort of as a whole.
So there's an important distinction here, isn't there, between usability testing and sort of more like technical testing
and QA,
QAing, yes, that both the content and I guess the functionality of the site.
Okay.
Okay, guys, well, thank you very much. So what we've talked about is what usability is, and basically what you need to focus on, and knowing what your users are doing, knowing how to fix your site if it needs fixing.
Absolutely.
And checking it worked.
Just stay user-focused. That's the thing.
Stay user-focused, after all, that is the name of the game, I guess.
Mm.
So what are we talking about next time, guys?
I think next time we'll probably go into look at email marketing.
Email marketing?
Yeah, it's actually a very effective way of marketing, but also a very risky way if you don't do it right.
It is, because we have all sorts of problems with spam, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
I should look forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Guys, thank you very much. That's Daniel Rowles and Jeremy Jacobs from Academy Internet. And chaps, how can people contact you if they want to feedback or just talk to you?
Just get to us at info@academyinternet.com. That's Academy Internet, just one word.
Okay, and phone numbers? Starting with +44
if in the UK, if you're not, and then 1273 733 433.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.